This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Before the storm, I kind of had a take care of my own prepper kind of mentality where, you know, I'm going to be good, my family's going to be good, and I'm going to, you know, defend what I have. And then right after that storm, I saw what was happening and realized I was stupid. I didn't need to do that. I needed to help my neighbor. Our community came together and got tight. We helped each other. There were a few bad apples, but you know, the amount of good that happened far outweighed any negativity that happened. You know, it was a beautiful thing.
Imagine the home or business you spent years of your life building being literally swept out from under you by rushing water you never saw coming. Imagine your insurance denying coverage because you didn't live in a proper flood zone. Imagine finding entire homes and bodies wrapped around trees miles from their property. That's what happened a year ago here in the Appalachian Mountains, to a community of people who are faithful and kind and want for nothing. People who never imagined they'd be casualties of such historic flooding caused by a hurricane in the mountains. Many have called Hurricane Helene biblical, or a 100-year flood. I was still working as a reporter at the time Helene swept through the mountains on September 27th, 2024, and I remember waking up the next morning to videos and photos of unbelievable damage the storm caused across multiple states. I soon learned it had a particularly devastating impact on unprepared regions of North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia, places where my husband and I have visited and where we honeymooned after our wedding were unrecognizable, entire houses swept downriver, people were trapped on rooftops. It immediately reminded me of footage from Hurricane Katrina in 2005, but I was hesitant to compare the two at first, given the catastrophic impact of Katrina on New Orleans and the Gulf. But I later learned that Helene was the deadliest hurricane on the U.S. mainland since Katrina. The total death count for Helene stands at about 250. Of those deaths, about 108 were counted in North Carolina alone. I traveled to Western North Carolina several times last year after the hurricane for work to report on the disaster. The scene was apocalyptic and war zone-like. Power and cell phone service went out for hundreds of thousands of people, and not just for a night or two. We're talking days, weeks, and even months for some who live in more remote areas. Gas stations were either empty or had lines with people waiting hours to fill their tanks and get out of town, only to get to the pump and be turned away because there was no gas left. Debris was everywhere. Cars wrapped around trees. Single-wide houses miles from where they originally stood. Personal belongings lost in the wreckage forever. 1 year later, I'm back in Western North Carolina to tell you a different story on my own podcast. One of hope and community and, of course, Southern Hospitality. My name is Audrey, and you're listening to Southern Hospitality for Beginners, a podcast where we discuss the meaning of Southern hospitality and whether that concept still exists in today's South. Helene caused an estimated $100 billion in damage, and many tourism-heavy towns in the Blue Ridge Mountains are still struggling to recover today, despite extensive rebuilding efforts over the last year. Amid the rubble and unthinkable loss and unsalvageable past lives, I have seen a year of incredible rebuilding efforts and resilience among the people who live here. I've seen people from across the South and across the country, ranging from church groups to military veterans to the Amish and random guys who know how to rebuild things and use heavy equipment, come together to help those in need. Today, I'm visiting Lake Lore and Chimney Rock for the first episode of this podcast. Both towns, right next to each other, are well-known travel destinations, especially in the summer and the fall. Lake Lore is famous for being a filming location for Dirty Dancing and other movies. Located around a lake at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, both towns offer a variety of local eateries, inns, and entertainment that keep visitors returning each year. But in September 2024, Lake Lore and Chimney Rock were devastated by Helene. The lake filled with debris, multiple bridges were knocked down, and entire buildings and homes in Chimney Rock, which sat right next to the banks of the Broad River, toppled into the water. Both towns are still under construction today. They have had to rebuild from nothing, and they are urging visitors to come back. Richard Sales is the co-owner of the Grafton Lodge, located right off the main strip of hotels and businesses in Lake Lore. The bed and breakfast, a lifelong dream for Richard and his wife, Kimberly Sales, sits atop a hill that was spared from some of the flooding other businesses in the area experienced. Still, the inn is suffering significant losses a year after the storm. Here's Richard.
If you like hiking and you like being on the lake and peace and tranquility of the mountains, you know, this is the place to come for sure.
When Helene came through on September 27, 2024, walk me through that day and what you remember.
All right. The night before, I was watching my Giants play the Cowboys, and the Giants lost. But it was raining like crazy. It had been raining for 2 days beforehand. And
Did you know that there was the hurricane coming?
Yes.
Through?
Yeah. We knew that the storm was coming, but we didn't expect it to be any worse than what we've seen before. We've seen the Rocky Broad River get really angry. It was like that in 2018. But we didn't expect it to be any worse than that. And then I was expecting to be no power, because that's happens around here. You know, you get a lot of rain and then, you know, trees will fall and take out power lines. So it's standard operating, you know, procedure to, you know, be prepared to get out the generators, or a lot of people will have their own, you know, automatic standby generators. And so I've gotten to a point where I can still make breakfast without power, no problem. Woke up in the morning, and as I expected, we had no power. So I just came over and started, you know, boiling water on a, you know, camping stove and making coffee and cooking bacon and getting eggs.
For your guests who are staying here?
Yes, yes. And so we, from our vantage point, you know, we were just like, okay, we got rain, no power, you know, no big deal. We'll get through this, not knowing how bad it was going to get.
So when did you see that total devastation?
I was in a routine of walking my dog down to the beach and back. It's about a mile walk. And I did that after taking care of our guests with breakfast and saw how high the water was in the lake and that it was almost to the road. All of the kayaks and all of the boats and everything were on top of each other, and I was like, holy crap, this is a lot different than I've ever seen before. So I knew it was bad, but still didn't know how bad it was.
When did you see what had happened to Chimney Rock?
We had one of our guests who has stayed with us since show up and needed a place to stay. So we were, you know, letting people stay with us that lost their place. And he was living in Chimney Rock and saw his place get demolished and a bunch of other, you know, he said that he had to climb over the debris on the bridge. And I just still couldn't envision that, you know. But about a week later, I was down helping at Leeward, and one of the guys that had a lot of dump trucks and heavy equipment asked me if I could hop in a truck with a lady from the Bill's Creek Fire Department to go to Chimney Rock Fire Department to bring them lunch. And he asked me if I knew where Chimney Rock Fire Department was, and I said yes. He goes, take her so that they can get lunch. I'm like, all right, no problem. That's when I saw how bad it was. And even then, it was amazing how much work had been done. And it was only a week or and a half, 2 weeks later. Yeah, that was when I really saw how bad Chimney Rock got hit. And it just blew my mind.
Why did Lake Lore and Chimney Rock get hit so badly? For people who aren't familiar with the area, why was the devastation so bad?
All of that water for 3 days has to come somewhere, and it ends up coming down the gorge, and it basically piled up debris in front of one bridge until that bridge gave away, and then come to the second bridge, and then it would pile up until that bridge gave away, and then it ended up in our lake. The dirt that was under buildings isn't there anymore. You know, the foundations are gone. Before the storm, I kind of had a take care of my own prepper kind of mentality where, you know, I'm going to be good. My family's going to be good. And I'm going to, you know, defend what I have. And then right after that storm, I saw what was happening and realized I was stupid. I didn't need to do that. I needed to help my neighbor. And our community came together and got tight. We helped each other. There were a few bad apples, but, you know, the amount of good that happened far outweighed any negativity that happened. You know, it was a beautiful thing.
You mentioned that you housed people who needed a place to stay after the storm. Why did you do that, and how many people do you think you had staying here?
We did it because it was the right thing to do. You don't even think twice about it. We have a friend that stayed with us that decided he wanted to build a home in this area, and became friends with other locals. And he pulled up in a truck with some other locals that lost their place of living and said that they need a place to stay. Can they stay? And there was no hesitation. It was absolutely. And then, so we probably had 6 or 7 rooms that we put people in all together. The linemen came from, I think it was Oklahoma, but they stayed here and were helping get power back on online. And before they left, they asked me if I needed anything, and I told them I was kind of getting low on bacon. And before a couple hours later, I had more bacon than I knew what to do with, so I didn't have to worry about bacon for a couple months.
And you were also helping feed people.
Mm-hmm. We fed people breakfast that came, and then I didn't do any cooking down at Leeward, but did what I could to help. And, you know, if I saw a need, I tried to help. And a lot of people did that. You know, there was one company that came and brought generators, and they decided they were going to build a shower for people to shower. And so we, you know, basically made a makeshift shower with hot water. That was really pretty cool. Somebody brought Starlink in the first week, and people were going to Leeward Market and Grill to communicate with loved ones to let them know that they were okay, you know, after the storm. And then we ended up getting a Starlink thanks to Ryan. Ryan Dietrich, he was amazing. He was like, he had the ability to do things that blew me away. You should probably talk to Ryan too.
I said goodbye to my guys. They helped me load up a truck with a lot of things. I took all the gas cans, all the diesel cans. I took chain pullers. I took a rope. And I shook hands with the guys that I've worked with for years. And my brother and I set off this direction.
This is Ryan Dietrich. He's a North Carolina native who has traveled and lived all over the world, but recently decided to make his home in Lake Lore. When Helene came through, Ryan was out of state, leading what he described as an adventure construction crew, designing ropes courses, zip lines, suspension bridges, and so on. He was already on his way back to North Carolina for another project when he heard that Lake Lore was accessible again by road and decided to return with a truckload of supplies.
And I ended up, I had a travel trailer out of town with some supplies. I brought some Starlinks that we had for doing real remote jobs and different trains for the work that we had done. And then I traveled into Lake Lure, through the down trees, through the down power lines.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Through scenes that I had never seen before, and I brought my travel trailer with me, so I had a safe haven to return to at night. You know, I didn't know what I was coming into, but I didn't have a place here necessarily, but... yeah, and then I came into Lake Lure, and that's where I started. And it was just a few days after the storm when I first heard there was a road in. But it was like watching and waiting and trying not to become a victim, right? Yeah. Or stop up traffic. But I knew if I could make it in, then I could be useful.
So it sounds like, given some of your professional background, you kind of had an idea before you came back of what supplies you could bring, what would be helpful, because I'm sure a lot of people were bringing things like food and water and coats, which is helpful, but you brought stuff that would actually help with kind of rebuilding and helping people who were trapped and things like that.
Yeah, so a lot of my former position, I still do it now, just under my own company. It is assessing what needs you're going to have and anticipating them well before they're needed. Because if you find yourself needing 5 gallons of diesel and you're 3 hours from where you can get it, it's not very helpful. And so, I mean, you assess the situation. Will there be water? Yes, that's going to be one of the first things everybody brings, and food. And it's great. But what are the other things that people need? And that was the like deeper question. I knew internet would be one of those big things. I knew that mobile power sources like a Jackery unit with a solar panel, which the police ended up using to charge their radios at a checkpoint where their radios were dying and they were struggling. my Starlink was brought down to the fire department right here and used for, I believe, their first internet access. And then the community now had an out and a way to start communicating because there was a Starlink there. And so I began posting on Facebook almost a daily log of what I was doing, asking for money and telling people where the money went to. Some of the first things that occurred was bringing in some, I think they're called transfer tanks. I think 100-gallon transfer tanks. So we got those brought in, one brought here to the Lake Lure Fire Department. And then we transported one over to the Chimney Rock Fire Department. My guys came in from Greenville, loaded down, you know, all the gas was already bought and filled in the tank. Just so we're not, so the fire departments aren't filling up their equipment with 5-gallon containers, which fuel was coming in. But then it's hard to say how many people were helped, but some of those initial things were like identifying that. And then eventually it was Starlinks and communication. The fire department would need an office set up. So I can't remember if I sourced a printer or not, but I got some laptops, got stationery and a number of other things and brought in a shelving unit and set up some laptops in there and just silently off to the side, not really knowing a lot of people. I was like, could you guys use these things? They were like, yes. It's like, great. So they were able to laminate passes and change their passes to get through the checkpoint with some of those materials.
Here's Richard again. What were some of the stories you heard from locals or visitors impacted by the storm that stood out to you?
One of the guys staying with us, Mark, he was staying at the Geneva and saw a lady in a car go down the river and get swallowed up by the river. That messed him up for a little bit. He's better now, but the amount of work that the girls down at Leeward Market and Grill did to feed people was amazing. The amount of donations that came into our area in multiple different spots. Spokes of Hope, the people that are rebuilding Chimney Rock are still there today. Precision Grading, that they're out there still helping people in Chimney Rock and Bat Cave. The Amish, there was people up, set up, I think it was the Amish and Mennonites. They were up at Ingalls grocery store and had were feeding people up there and had showers for people up there. My friend came over. I told him that we were basically intercepted a bunch of stuff that was supposed to go to Leeward Market and Grill, but they were being overwhelmed with supplies being delivered to them. So I kind of told my friend to come over to the lodge and to get some stuff. And he came over with the intention of giving whatever he could get to this family who lost their home, and the husband and the wife, she was pregnant and due any day, and they moved into an unfurnished house, and within like a week and a half, 2 weeks, the house was furnished, she had the baby, and diapers and formula and all kinds of stuff that they needed for a new family. And right away, you know, and it didn't take long.
But even though your business survived, you survived, and that's amazing, and you were able to help people, your business is still down this year.
Yeah.
How much is it down, and why do you think that is?
We now have more debt than we had going into the storm. We got 2 more loans to help us stay afloat. We're down about 50% of our normal business because I think, you know, the communication about our town of Lake Lure being, people think it's closed. Our town has been open since November, but the body of
2024.
Water, yeah. But the body of water, our lake, you know, is closed. And it should be back open by spring of next year. So, you know, the amount of work that's being done in our area is amazing. These guys are working 24/7, you know, 7 days a week, hardly ever taking time off. You know, and we're super appreciative of that. Then they're trying to get us back open as soon as possible. It's just taking a long time. But we're trying, hanging on. We're dying slowly, but got faith that it'll come back.
I think what's special about the Western North Carolina community and other areas around Appalachia that were hit by Helene is how you all came together to help each other. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about how the Lake Lore community came together and whether that is unique to this area?
Before the storm, you know, you kind of over the years recognize who's local and who's not. But after the storm, you know, you recognize those same people and now you're giving them hugs, you know, and making sure your brother or sister is okay, you know, or your neighbor, because they've all become family.
This is Chrissy Barnes Blanton. She's not from Chimney Rock, but she's been living in the mountain town for the last 5 years. After her mom died, she reconnected with an old childhood friend from Chimney Rock named Lisa. Chrissy didn't know Lisa was disabled when she first reached out, and Chrissy ended up caring for her friend over the last several years. On September 27th of last year, Lisa decided to sit out the storm at home instead of evacuating. Her house on the Broad River was destroyed, and she was Chimney Rock's only death resulting from the hurricane.
I've been here the last 5 years. My friend lived on the street on the other side where
the river. On the other side of the river.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we grew up together on the same street in the same church about an hour down the hill. And 2020, my mother had passed away, and I started coming back up hiking and things like that. And I remembered that my friend had moved to Chimney Rock about 10 years ago. And I called her up and I'm like, hey, I'm up in Chimney Rock every week. Can I stop and see you? She's like, yes, please. Like I say, at one time we were really close, and then you grow up and, you know, kids, career, all the things. And,
right.
And we reconnected, and I didn't know, but she was disabled and didn't have many people to help her, you know, and I just happened to be at a time in my life where I could, where I had some time, you know. And I started coming up to help her, and she would be hospitalized, and that led to me staying in her home and taking care of the dog and the house and her and things like that. And I grew up on a 75-acre farm that I still live on. I had never experienced a street or a community like this in any regard. I mean, we had our church community and things like that, but once I got home, you know, there was no one around. I started staying with Lisa, and neighbors are coming in bringing food. I mean, they're just walking in like they know me, and they do not, you know, and just being completely embraced, number one, by Southside Street, which is the name of the street, and then number two, by the whole community, more particularly after the flood. Because when I stayed with her, I basically stayed with her. I may have walked in and gotten a meal and took it back, but I didn't socialize too much besides with the neighbors, you know. And but after the flood, she did not evacuate, so she perished. She died. She's the one fatality
that
Chimney Rock had. Wow. Thank you. Yeah, she didn't evacuate. She wasn't the only one on the street that did not evacuate, but
was
because of
disabled?
Her disability, yes, she had not driven in 3 years. She had a titanium in her back that had gotten infected, and she was actually on hospice care at the time of the flood. So
wow.
Lots of theories there on, you know, if she wanted to go down with the house and things like that. You know, no one really knows, but yeah. So, hi, Jesse. You looking for April?
Yes,
I think
time.
She's still back there. so many of us actually have only met and gotten close to one another since the flood because they're only 155 year-round residents. A lot of people don't know that it's really a small community.
Very small.
And like April, who owns the shop, Jesse went that way towards April. I'm Chrissy.
Yeah, she doesn't have to move the van after all. Spokes of Hope wanted to move it, but...
Should I tell her not to move the van?
Yeah, she doesn't have to.
Never mind, Jesse. She doesn't have to.
The street that I'm speaking of, the bridge was washed out, and the neighbors and the ones that live there, it was 4 or 5 months before they could access their street even. And once they could, and I say we, but as I've said, I don't live there. I'm not a permanent resident. But through the flood and through everything, I've been treated as such. I've been able to come and go and help in the volunteer efforts. And I was included in the Christmas. There was a big Christmas celebration that was really, really sweet. And I know that I would not have been able to heal as much as I have, which feels like only a tiny bit, but had I been excluded. I wasn't excluded. I was embraced, you know, by everyone, even down to this job, you know, the mayor, April, the council, you know, they've all just... It didn't matter who you were or what you had. Everything got leveled, and, you know, we all jumped in together. So
that's what I've heard from a lot of people between Lake Lore and here about how close the community became after the flooding.
Very close.
And how people just kind of stepped up to help where they could, business owners, homeowners, or...
Yeah, what I was saying was April, the mayor was on vacation. April had to be acting mayor when this happened.
Wow.
Yeah, she's on council. I'm not sure what her role is, but yeah, so she... a lot of the folks on the street, you know, most of them evacuated into the Carter Lodge, which was a motel that's... didn't make it, but... But yeah, a lot of them rode it out together, you know, like in a motel room over there, overlooking the river. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but I was just embraced from day one on Southside, and still am. Like when I work, I go and stay with a neighbor, the direct neighbor, you know, so I don't have to drive home. And I mean, it's just been unbelievable to me personally, you know, because I've never really experience much of anything like this.
So when you hear the term Southern hospitality, what do you think of?
Well, mentally I see, you know, like church picnics and meals and food being brought to you when you're sick or whatever, and we have that on the street. There's a gentleman who's not doing well, and
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And given so much food that they're giving it away too, because, you know, that's just what we do. We feed each other and we open our homes to one another. You know, if you're stranded on the side of the road, someone's going to stop and check on you, and you're probably not in danger, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Do you feel like that cultural, I don't know what you want to call it, phenomenon, way of life played into recovery efforts after Helene?
I kind of think that we would like to think that we all would have helped one another no matter where we are.
Yeah.
But I refer to this more as Appalachia.
Yes.
You know, even though we are the South, but it's more Appalachian. And I don't know if that makes it any different than the Deep South, you know.
Definitely.
It does? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Definitely in how we speak, of course. Yes. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely different facets of the South, and Appalachia's got its own cultural identifiers. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. But I think it still counts, as the South here in this area, in North Carolina.
Yeah,
even
definitely.
Virginia, maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to ask you. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
How much help that we've had that actually didn't come from the South. The Amish have helped us so much. Mm-hmm. They have stayed with us, the Amish from Pennsylvania. They've stayed with us the entire time.
Wow.
We have Spokes of Hope. They're from South Carolina, but I'm pretty sure it's a brother and sister based out of Ohio to begin with. So, and they came in right away. Their truck's out there with an emblem on it. I think they came in right away and vowed to not leave until it was finished.
Wow.
And just said that they felt led to come here.
Wow.
And they've not left us. They're up in Bat Cave now, which is 3 miles up. So what we call the gorge is Girton, Bat Cave, Chimney Rock, Lake Lure. And so we're little communities, but we're all part of one bigger community, the Hickory Nut Gorge. Yeah.
I see.
So, yeah. And another thing was, you know, we're 100% tourism based community. When the flood came through, we were all unemployed. Everyone was unemployed.
For how long?
Until Labor Day.
Wow.
No, most of us just opened Labor Day. The state park was a few months before, and I think they had about 80 employees. You know, things that you don't think about, mm-hmm. people being out of jobs. And the smokehouse and the firehouse set up showers and meals, and before the recovery teams could get in here, just locals, you know, making sure that, you know, we had food. And some were getting food out of the river, I mean, because the restaurants all washed away, and you just grabbed what you could because we didn't know how long it would be until, and then share.
How did people who lost their jobs get by? Was it government assistance or just...
From what I understand, government has assisted a lot.
Okay.
A lot. I can't speak with 100% certainty, but mm-hmm. In the meetings I've been in, they've been given what they need, mm-hmm. believe it or not. And a lot of people don't think that, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, they've... Yeah, and like I said, the volunteer organizations, all this woodwork in every store... These stores were this deep in mud.
Wow.
You know, the water was all the way across the... Your cars would have been underwater. Yeah, there were 3 and 4 feet of mud in the ones across the street.
Wow.
Yeah, trees the size of this room in the street, telephone poles. There's still a broken one right there when you go out. I mean, just unbelievable. And mm-hmm. the other end of the street, there were 7 or 8 buildings. They're gone. Mm-hmm. I mean... There was a whole lot more. Mm. It's gone.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah.
What do you think the rest of the country, anyone listening to this, mm-hmm. should know about this area?
Okay, well, we all say it's a magical place. And we all have our own individual stories of how that magic has either brought us here or kept us here. Mm-hmm. And it's magnetic. And if any store you go in and talk to the owners, I mean, you're going to feel... their love for the area, you're going to feel their love for each other, and the commitment now particularly to stick together and work together and keep the village alive. It's a very, very special place. It's been here since the late 40s, early 50s, most of the businesses and the houses across the street since the 20s.
Wow.
I mean, most of them are gone now, mm-hmm. but I think there were 13 homes on the riverside, and there may be 3 or 4 left. Yeah, that's the perspective that I give.
I mean, I'm sorry you lost your friend.
Thank you.
Obviously.
Thank you.
But
yes,
it's kind
me
of
too.
A miracle that was the only.
It is a miracle.
Casualty.
It is a miracle, yeah. And the direct neighbors to her, I mean, they lost their home too on each side, and one wasn't home, and the other ones were, and they fled on foot up into the state park. But it happened very quickly.
Yeah.
6 a.m. Everything seemed okay. By 9:15, the homes were going in the house.
Wow.
I mean, in the river, excuse me. The homes were going in the river within a couple hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
just because everything came.
It was so fast. If you go on up, it's much steeper and much more rugged, just 3 miles up the road. So once it got down
like
here.
Like near Back Hay?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Once it got down here to more of a, it's not necessarily flat, but it's flatter than up there. They say that the water was going like 110 miles an hour back there. And up here, I mean, it was all the way.
Like wind.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
crazy.
And it was, yeah, there was really no time for much preparation.
This is my friend Steve Antle. Steve and I were strangers a year ago, but when Helene happened and I was working as a reporter, Steve was one of the first people who agreed to an interview. He quickly became something of a guide for me in the Fairview area just outside Asheville. There's a section of Fairview called Garin Creek, known locally as Craigtown, where 11 members of the Craig family and two others perished when floodwaters rushed down the mountainside and swept away an entire community of homes. Steve is part of what he calls the ballooning community, or people who fly hot air balloons. This community, Steve told me, is extremely close and resourceful, and they came together to help donate and deliver supplies to Western North Carolina through Steve, who organized and distributed all of it with some help from other locals.
We couldn't help other people because we didn't have enough gas to get anywhere.
Right. So not only did people not have anything, whether it's power, gas, you know, water,
right.
but they can't get it, and
right.
they can't call anyone for help because
right.
there's no cell phone service.
Right.
And they can't drive anywhere because they don't have enough gas and they're not sure how far they can get without needing to refill again.
Exactly. And that was the situation. And so once we got, it actually took me longer to drive from Fairview to Hendersonville, which is about 17 miles. It took me longer to get to them than it took them to drive from Central Georgia to Hendersonville.
Wow.
And so when we met them and we offloaded everything onto my trailer and then brought all those supplies back to Fairview, the first thing we did was try to organize our own situation. I made sure that all our cars had fuel. I made sure that we had a generator that we, you know, that we could get our family, our immediate family taken care of, and we got that done the first day. And then the next day, I made contact with the people down at Fairview Volunteer Fire Department, and it was then that I realized that we had multiple casualties in the community, that we had severe loss of life, severe property damage. I had a meeting with all of the first responders and the National Guard that were down there. That same day, they were bringing Chinook helicopters in, and they were plucking people from out in Garin Creek and Craigtown and Flat Creek and flying them here to actually to where we're sitting. And they were landing the helicopters here at Food Lion and across the street at the school. And our house is just right behind the school, so we walked down and we helped offload the people from the helicopters and get them to the ambulances and family members that, you know, would meet here to get them. We had a pretty clear idea that this was going to be pretty bad.
And you knew the Craig family, which lost
yes.
11. When you found out what had happened to them, how did that hit you?
It was devastating, but we had so much stuff to do that we couldn't really think about it at that moment. And we didn't know that they were all gone. So my daughter's best friend was Mackenzie Craig, and her husband is the fellow that lost 11 family members. And we've known the Craigs for, Jesse and Mackenzie live a little ways away, and so he had managed to make it up to Craigtown on first a car, then a four-wheeler, and then finally on foot. And when he got up to Craigtown, he saw that everything was just gone. Like, there were probably 7 or 8 houses that used to be there, and it was just nothing but a river of debris flowing down the mountain. This was the morning of. This was about the time I was trying to dig out of our place. And So by the next day, the first responders were full bore out there as far as setting up a command post at the fire department there. That whole area was isolated. Like you could not get from here to there unless you went on foot. So everything had to be brought in by air. They were airlifting emergency equipment and everything else into the Craigtown area. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know that they were all gone immediately. We knew the houses were gone, but we didn't know. And they were still plucking people off of Flat Creek, you know, miles downriver. They were still finding people, mm-hmm. cleaning the houses, cleaning the logs. So there was always that hope. We didn't know for certain how bad it was going to be until we started finding bodies, which was probably starting from like the third day in and going all the way out for probably a month. Well, the mountains were not designed to handle the amount of water that we got in such a short time. It was not solely Hurricane Helene. So in the lead up to Helene, the 4 or 5 days before that storm got here, when it was still out in the Gulf somewhere, we were getting, I think we got upwards of 10 or 12 inches of rain in 4 or 5 days because of a front that came through and stalled out, and it just dumped water. So we were already saturated to the gills. We already had normal flooding issues. In the mountains, when it rains, all that water, it doesn't absorb into the ground. It has to go off the mountains, and it's going to go to the lowest point,
right,
wherever that may be. And so all the rain that we had filled up all of the absorption that the lower valleys could take. Well, then Helene came through, and it collided with that other frontal boundary, and it stalled Helene out over us. And so for another 3 or 4 days, we got another 10 or 15 inches. And that water had no place to go.
Right.
And so it's going to go to its lowest point. And when that happened, all of the sides of the mountains, all of the cliffs, all of the woods and everything broke apart, and it all swept, you know, down. It wasn't just water. We're talking that it was like a giant mudslide.
Right.
With trees and debris, boulders, and then as it came down the mountain and it started hitting houses and so forth, it picked up all that debris. And it started carrying things like cars and dumpsters and houses. And the more it built up, the stronger it got, the further it went. We had stuff that came from Craigtown that was found 10 miles downstream by Batcave.
Wow.
You know, and that's 10 miles as a crow flies. It's probably 20 miles of valleys.
Right.
And it just went from, you know, way up here and just kept on going. They said that, you know, it's a once in a century storm. It might even have been once in a millennial storm. I don't know. But I just know that the nearest thing that we have on record for Asheville was in 1916, I think. And we still have people living in tents and campers.
Why is that?
Everybody's situation is unique, but I think that it boils down to there's a lot of people that aren't in a position to rebuild yet, but they don't want to leave the immediate area or their property. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that just threw in the towel and were like, We're getting by living in a camper now, and we might as well just keep doing that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they've given up on trying to do anything else for the time being. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of that. People are like, they just don't want to deal with all of the hassles of what it's going to take to rebuild or
Like the red tape, government
Everything.
Assistance.
Like floodplain redrawing, codes, revisions, federal, state, local government restrictions, what can and can't be done, where it can and can't be done.
Insurance.
And the insurance companies were not the greatest in this thing. There was a lot of cases where the insurance went to great lengths to not cover stuff. There were, I have friends of mine out in, Swannanoa. They had a shop, auto repair shop, and it got wiped out, and the insurance wouldn't cover it because they said it's technically in a floodplain. Well, it's in a 100-year floodplain, and it's never flooded until now, but the insurance, you know, the fine print says, technically, you're in a 100-year floodplain, so we're not going to give you a dime.
Wow.
And they had a $100,000 shop.
Yeah, that's terrible. You think that your insurance is going to show up for you when you need it.
Yeah,
that's why people have insurance.
And people don't think about that. They don't look at the...
The fine print.
Fine print or the contract. I mean, they do now, but...
Now you can run it through ChatGPT.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's what Steve and Richard and Ryan have to say about how the concept of Southern hospitality played into Helene recovery efforts and what makes Western North Carolina special compared to other places in the U.S.
Yeah, I would say, so Western North Carolina pretty much has two groups of people here. You have the people that were born and raised here, have been here forever, family, generation after generation. But you have a large portion of the population that is brand new to here. They've moved from every other place, fallen in love with the mountains, and moved here, you know, based off the tourism stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've decided to retire or whatever, move their families here. And so when this happened, you know, we were all trapped together. I kind of liken it to, we were all like in an elevator that had stopped in between floors,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we couldn't get out,
mm-hmm.
and nobody could get in. Well, that's what we were. Tennessee couldn't get to us, South Carolina couldn't get to us, Eastern North Carolina couldn't get to us, Virginia couldn't get to us. So everybody's in the same boat. We're all in the same misery. We're all dealing with the same problems. And it just kind of coalesced into a group of battle-hardened people that were just going to get through it. I think the mountain people were better suited to handle what was going on.
Why do you say that?
Well, they're just a tougher breed of people than, say, our imports from the big cities or, you know, up north or wherever. But everybody really just pitched in together. And, you know, I know my daughter was raised here, and I didn't live here for the bulk of her life. I came back and forth to see her, and so I knew a few people around here, you know. I knew probably 20 people in Western North Carolina in total. And now I know everybody. I mean, like, I can't go anywhere without running into somebody that we met because of the storms. And that's just, and that's not just people that I met in person, but people on Facebook. I reconnected with a guy that grew up on my street in Fort Lauderdale when I was a kid. Didn't know he lived here.
Wow.
He lived in Fairview.
Wow.
And he's not on Facebook. When the storm hit, his wife saw my Facebook and asked him, could this be the Steve Antle that you grew up with? And he showed up right here in this parking lot. We were at a food line getting a meal, and, you know, I hadn't seen him in 30-something years.
Huh.
So it really connected everybody. Fairview in particular, because that's where most of my work was done, but even out other areas of Asheville and Hendersonville and Fletcher and Swannanoa. I met so many people from out there because they got hit so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Black Mountain. So, yeah, it was a very unusual situation. But I think it was a combination of the nature of the people that gravitate to places like here or are raised here, and also the fact that we were all really isolated from the rest of the world.
Because of the storm and the community that came together to help each other is truly a beautiful thing to see when it was happening. And when the power came back on, I cried a little bit because I was like, oh no, now we're going to get back to normal and normal sucks. But, yeah, it really was awesome to see how we came together as a community and truly cared about each other, you know. That was awesome. That was really cool.
Do you think the concept of Southern hospitality and just this tradition in the South of being hospitable played into that at all? You said you're from upstate New York area. You moved down here and to the South in the 90s. Do you feel like that's a cultural aspect of this place and how the response to Helene was?
Yeah. The difference between the North and the South, I think it's obvious, but it's just different, you know. In the South, people immediately, you know, kind of greet you with, you know, friendship and like you said, hospitality. In the North, you know, there's more of a on guard kind of thing, like, what are you up to, what do you want kind of attitude. But once the ice is broken, it's virtually the same. But the difference, you know, in Lake Lure, you know, that's I think very true of this area, no matter where you're from. For the most part, I mean, there are occasional, you know, bad apples in the bunch, but I'd say most of us are open and friendly and welcoming, and especially if you have a business, you know. So, yeah, I don't think Southern hospitality is dead by any means, but I don't think it's, you know, just a Southern thing. I think, you know, good people are everywhere, no matter where you're from. And I don't think the South has a, you know, monopoly on hospitality by any means, but they get all the credit for it, for sure.
For people who might be listening, what do you want them to know a year later, after Helene, and should people come visit?
Absolutely. We miss you. yes, please come. There's more to do than just get out on the body of water called Lake Lure. Our businesses are open. Chimney Rock is open. The village is open. The state park is open. There's all kinds of hiking to do. One of our neighbors just down the street just opened a candy shop and an escape room, soon to be an axe throwing business. You know, there's plenty of wineries and breweries and apple orchards and wholesome family fun that you can do, zip lining and rafting and, you know, outdoor adventures to be had. And I think, you know, people need more of outdoor adventure.
I hope I answer this correctly, but to go back before the storm or anything else, I chose this area for a reason. And when I've lived here in this home, I've gotten to know my neighbors, and they've gotten to know me, and I know people in the community in the neighborhood. And not everybody, right, is on the same wavelength. You might run into somebody at one of these restaurants or whatever in passing, and you try to strike up a conversation, and they're disinterested. They're the business owner from New York, and this is one of their properties, and great, good for you. But there's a whole heck of a lot of people here that are very community oriented, and you do care about your neighbors. And that's, there's a lot of people who have spent a lot of their life here, or they've also chosen Lake Lure Chimney Rock area because of the friendliness. With the 1 year anniversary coming up with Hurricane Helene, I think one of the most important things to do is not reflect on the hurt or what was lost, but reflect on how lucky we are. And I'm lucky enough to have traveled and to have lived in some places where people don't have anything. And they, when I say anything, it isn't about materialistic things. It's about having hope or a future. And we have a future, and we have hope, and we have opportunity, and we have freedom, and we have safety. Whether people want to choose to believe that or not, until it's gone, until you've experienced a place, the environment, where you don't have the ability to work, the ability to be safe, to rest well at night. It isn't just about having a car or a home. It's about having the opportunity to even lift yourself up. We have options. Maybe you got to travel. Maybe you got to drive an extra hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. Maybe the job doesn't pay that well. You have a job. You have a safe country. You have resources. There are things out there. There's a lot of silver linings that actually came from the storm. There is community. We watched people come together. Was there loss? Yes. Should we focus on that? No. Why would we continuously loop on that? And I do believe it becomes a little bit addictive to loop on some of these negative things. But the truth is, like, what are the benefits? The community's been killing it. We have so much. We are so lucky. We live in a beautiful place. We have a beautiful community. And if you don't believe that, go out and experience it. Like, get out of your house, go to the library, which is fantastic. Go to some of these community events. Like, there's a lot of amazing people around.